Thanks for tuning into Conversations About Meaningful Things, the podcast where we dig into life, faith, and all the important questions. In a world that can feel isolating sometimes, we want to encourage you that you're not alone, that God loves you and isn't afraid of your questions. And that's the purpose of this podcast. In our time together, you can expect real talk, genuine interviews, and probably a few laughs along the way. Our hope is as you connect, you feel seen, loved, and encouraged as you take steps in your faith journey. So settle in and let's dive into the conversation. We're so happy to have you along.
Well, hello and welcome to another conversation about hopefully a meaningful thing for you. I am Steve and I'm glad to welcome you to this episode of our podcast. And I'm also glad to welcome my sort of co-host, because we got sort of two other co-hosts today. But Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm doing well, Steve. How are you?
Good. I like the dad hat. That's good.
Oh, thank you. What is he talking about? I'm wearing a hat that has
says,
the word dad,
says
on,
dad
it.
On it. Yes. It wasn't like a dad bod or dad hat thing. It was just like, it actually is a hat that says dad.
It is. It is. So, listener, just imagine right now.
A big cowboy hat
with it's a 10-gallon hat with the word dad on it, and it has my kids' names also laser engraved into the word dad.
So it's a very personal.
It's very special.
Yeah. So folks, Father's Day is coming.
Very depending on when you're listening.
Yeah, it's like four holidays away.
It is coming.
It's coming at some point. Oh, Alex, I hear another voice.
Yeah. Well, we're just going to keep everyone in suspense. There's a third voice today. We have with us. It's been a while since you've heard his voice, but we have a third host today, Hank Coleman. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for inviting me.
So Hank is on staff with us here at church. He is our executive pastor. I'm trying to remember how long ago we had you on. It's several episodes now.
It's been a few months. Yeah.
It's been a few months, but we're really excited to have you back on
the
podcast today. And I'm really looking forward to today's conversation and something that, Hank, you talked about a lot. We've talked a lot about just over our time hanging out is just how we approach giving, how we approach finances. We're going to kind of cut to the chase a little bit, I guess, but something that, at least for me, growing up, and if you've ever listened to Dave Ramsey before, he said this, but growing up as a kid, there are certain things that our parents may or may not have talked about very clearly. I think the line that Dave says, and if you have kids in the room, maybe plug their ears.
Oh, boy.
This is PG. He would say, as a kid, you just assumed that your parents didn't have two things. They didn't have money and they didn't have sex. You figured they had none. Turns out they had both. Yeah. But it was not talked about. It was not communicated. And certainly in my house growing up, like, money was always kind of talked about in sort of a, hey, don't worry about it. We've got this. It's under control. And we would maybe be given money to give on Sunday morning as an offering as kids. But at least for me, finances and doing it in a biblical way was something that I actually had to learn myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if that's other people's story as well. Or maybe you're listening today and going, does God even have opinions or thoughts on our finances? So we're gonna talk about that today.
Hmm. Sometimes I think that we don't realize our parents had money until they start spending it all on their grandchildren.
Like, yes,
I think this skips a generation.
Wait a second.
They realize that they had enough money, but they were a little nervous and maybe didn't want to spend it all immediately, and so maybe they were saving up for the grandkids. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I do think in the way technology and culture has been progressing, if we want to call it progressing, you know, there's a lot of people at a younger age are thinking about businessy type stuff sooner, I think. Like for me, business stuff was like, oh, I'll go cut the neighbor's lawn and maybe they'll give me $5.
Yeah.
But today, you know, we've got even pre-teenagers that have entrepreneurial ideas and they execute on them. And
yep.
So I think, you know, the whole world of finance is, I think has broadened out to a much wider age range, mm-hmm. Where we're actually dealing with it. And it's not just, you know, our parents kind of, you know, just tagging us along until we get to be 18. And then we're like, oh no, I remember, you know, growing up, it was a big deal when you went to college and all the credit card companies were like, hey,
you're an adult now. Yeah.
You're an adult now. And you're like, t-shirt. Okay, I'll get a credit card and a t-shirt and
tons of debt.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe there wasn't a lot of discussion about how do you handle and balance all of that. So, this is a great topic for us to discuss today.
Yeah, I agree. So Hank, one of the main reasons why we wanted to have you on for this one specifically was your story kind of intersects with this world. And maybe even just for our listeners who don't know, could you give us like the 30,000 foot view? Like why is this topic in particular such a passion point for you? Maybe just in given your history and then intersecting that into ministry, how's this topic impact you?
Yeah, my it's a long story. I'll try to keep it kind of short, but my father was an executive with an oil company, and he made the money that it sounds like you would make if you were an executive with an oil company. He lost it all, and we lived on a house. It was just he and I. My parents had split up, and he and I just lived together in about a 4,000 square foot house on the second hole of a golf course in Atlanta.
Wow.
He had three cars. I was young enough I didn't drive, and so had the sports car, the Lincoln Town car, and had in a truck. And I watched. That's kind of where my passion for this started, was seeing him at the top of his career, and then through indecision or bad decisions, go from that lifestyle to when he passed away in the living room of our house in South Georgia, in a probably about 1,000 square foot, maybe 1,200 square foot house, in the living room of the house in a hospital bed, with nothing really at the end except some debt, just lost, you know, just that wild ride of finance. And when it was just he and I had a crash course in finance because he had several strokes when it was just he and I effectively managed the household when I was in middle school, or you know, basically fifth, sixth grade.
Wow.
He had major strokes, and I was the one actually writing the checks. I was the one, you know, balancing the checkbook because he physically couldn't. His hands weren't able to work, and so that was kind of the downhill from there. But seeing that motivated me to help people with finance. It's kind of the bent, I guess, the thing that really pushed me was knowing as I got older, realizing that some simple decisions on his part, simple things that he could put into place, would have changed the outcome dramatically.
Yeah.
And it may sound funny, but giving is a part of that in your relationship with money, and as opposed to a relationship with Christ, is a big part of that. So I, later on, you know, kind of fast forward, I was in the financial industry for over 20 years, helping people with money. And what the big thing I learned in that was, in most cases, it was heart issues, not math issues. People were making decisions with just themselves in mind, just a lot of selfish reasons that got people into trouble.
Yeah.
And it came back to, again, how they relate to money, how they relate to God.
So it's interesting you put it that way. Our relationship to money is what you're talking about.
And
most of us, I shouldn't say most of us, I think a lot of people just think of money as just like, well, that's just something that I have. Like it's not necessarily like a relationship with it. And I think that's an important thing to point out, that the way we relate to it, the way we think about it, the way we control it or it controls us, I've found that it's usually one of those two.
Yep.
Either it controls us or we control it. Mm. And you talked about our relationship with Christ. You know, Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So mm-hmm. clearly there is a linkage between the valued resources mm-hmm. and what's going on in our hearts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember I heard a speaker one time say, if you want to show me what's important to you without saying a word, just give me your checkbook.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's...
In my experience, usually in my planning meetings, I would throw people off because it didn't matter if I was working with a landscaper or somebody working just part-time or a neurosurgeon. Mm-hmm. I charged them $1 for my first meeting, and that paid me back for the two little small pocket-sized Mead notebooks, a little 80-sheet Mead notebooks. And I would tell them... For the next month, so until our next meeting next month, I want you to put in every dollar that you spend.
Yeah.
And I know there's more sophisticated ways of doing it now. I think, you know, there's Dave Ramsey's Every Dollar. There's a lot of different programs out there that use a phone. There were some back then too, but the physical act of writing down, $6 Starbucks, and everybody picks on Starbucks and their $6 coffee. But again, it's a heart issue, not a caffeine issue. But if you write that down, usually it took about 2 weeks or less before people started realizing and changing some habits.
I want to ask you this, Hank, because I love this concept of it's a heart issue. It's not a math issue. It's not a caffeine issue. But as we're talking, I'm even thinking of the scripture that says you can't serve two masters. You're going to love one or the other. You can't serve God and money. You can't have your heart completely about finances and not having enough, or, you know, it's all about me and what I can grasp onto, or God. It's one or the other. So I'm curious just from your life experience and conversations and now being in ministry, maybe speak to that person that's like, well, I don't think I have a heart issue with money. I'm not good at finances or I don't really, I can't wrap my head around it. How does the way that we handle money, how do you think that does that reveal what we truly value, where our heart lies? Do you think there's a connection there?
I do. I think there's a connection there. I think that, somebody that, you know, the example you gave that just says, you know, it's like adamant about that I don't have any problems. Mm-hmm. I'd like your laugh is exactly kind of, you know, there's a Southern expression, you know, bless his heart.
Yeah.
If I think people are not intentional, I think a lot of people kind of just push, you know, kind of flow through life. And I've met a lot of people that had a great income, so they didn't have to be as intentional with their money. They didn't have to plan it out. Where if you meet some folks with very little income, they have to be a little bit more strategic, right? They know they have a mortgage payment or rent, and they know they have a car payment and insurance and some of the big stuff, right? But like Steve mentioned, you know, show me your checkbook. I want you know, show me your bank account, and I'll tell you what's important to you, and I can tell you. I learned way early on that I don't create budgets for people.
Yeah.
Because I can make an amazing budget that you'll never follow, and it's an extreme waste of time. Yeah. But guiding people through conversations, looking back over by the time they're meeting with somebody about it, maybe they've started making some changes. So maybe go back a few months if you're looking at your bank statements and say, okay, McDonald's. Every day, you know, and I'm pointing a finger at myself because that in some ways resembles my check, but you know, but it's being intentional, right? It's knowing, okay, I have this much money that I can use for lunches every week, kind of leading into the intentionality of things. I don't think I answered your question.
No, right. That makes a lot of sense. I also, and maybe playing devil's advocate a little bit, I think maybe this in the world of finance, Dave Ramsey uses the phrase of free spirit and nerd, you've got these two people, like the nerd is maybe more bent towards like, I love budgets and spreadsheets and like,
sure, the spender and the saver.
The spender and the saver, right? And so maybe if you're the saver, obviously there's extremes on both ends, I think, of this pendulum. But for the free spirit, maybe even like coupling in the spiritual side of things, and we want to talk about generosity today as well, because that's something God talks a lot about. But talk to that person who's going, well, I just want to, I don't want to be intentional. I want to be moved by the Spirit, and when He says to give, then I will.
That's cute.
Why is intentionality so important here?
Well, because I'll jump in. I think intentionality is important because we need to be wise with how we manage everything that we have, right? Like, those that have kids, we tend to be or should be strategic about what we're pouring into them, what we're keeping them away from. Yeah. Like, we don't just say, hey, just go run around the neighborhood and just see what happens. Like, we, but you know, do we do that with our money? Like, I'll just have a pocket full of money and we'll just see what happens today. Like, I don't think we do that with other parts of our lives.
It's not wise to.
It's not wise to, yeah. Now, I kind of want to go back. You quoted, one of you quoted, you know, Jesus said, you can't serve God and money.
Mm-hmm.
Have we ever thought about why that is?
Mm.
Like, why can't I serve God and money? Can't me making a lot of money serve God? Like, can't they serve each other? Like, how does that work? Why was that such a line that Jesus drove home, a principle, you can't serve God and money? Got any thoughts on that?
There's always going to be one primary thing, right? And if it's, I've just never seen it done well in practice of somebody that it's the waiting. It's like there's a lot of times where people wait. Like, I'm going to wait to do this. I'm going to wait till I'm prepared to do this. Once I hit my, you know, once I get my first million, then I'm going to start contributing. One has got to be your focus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My thought with that is that, those two as masters don't have the same priorities.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so you can't have them both as a master, cause they take you in different directions.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's been my thought on that.
I think also my thought goes to we live in an upside down kingdom. What is wisdom in God's economy, for a lot of reasoning in human speaking, feels like foolishness. Like, for Kirsten and I, years ago in our marriage, like, tithing really became important to us, realizing like God wants. All of this is God's. Every single resource, our ability to work and create an income is God's gift to us. And so, like, He owns it all. The fact that He asks us to give us the best, the first fruits, the 10%, like, as a floor for, it's not the ceiling, it's the floor where we should start. That's actually super generous of God. He's going like, hey, give me your best. Give me your 10%. Again, God doesn't need our money. I think it's conditioning our heart to trust Him. But what I've come to realize, it's like, to the rest of the world, and there have been months where I'm like, man, that 10% would be nice to keep in my bank account. It looks like foolishness to set aside money that you're going to literally give away. But there is a principle that, at least for us, that we've seen work out in our marriage, in our lives personally, that as we trust God with our finances, contentment just comes to the surface for us. Like, where I don't need material things. I don't need a certain lifestyle to be content, and I can trust God with what He's blessed us with. And as we bless others, there's a phrase that we've been hearing. There's a series of groups that's going on here at church right now called Rooted. And one of the phrases that's been kind of echoed throughout the past 10 weeks going through this is, we're blessed to be a blessing. Like, God desires to use our resources, things that He's given us, to bless others. And in turn, we are blessed as well.
Yeah, you know, we mentioned relationship earlier, and you know, there we have a relationship with the Lord, right? And that's the way we handle our finances is part of that. Yeah. When Tina and I first got married, she like I would say, "Hey, I'm heading out. See you later." And she'd be, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa! I need a hug. Like we have to hug before we part." And that was like that's like a baseline for her. And and like. Maybe it wasn't my inclination, but knowing it was important to her and important to our relationship, gladly, right? And now that's my default now as well. Mm. And I think, you know, early on as our relationship with God grows, matures, and we start to wrestle with some of the choices we have with our finances, you know, it may be one of those things at the very beginning where we're like, oh, okay, well, I know this is important to God, so I'm gonna do this faithfully the way He's asking me to. But then we recognize, oh, this is really good for the relationship.
Yeah.
And God's got me, so I don't have to worry about, gee, if I give this, I won't have enough, because if we're honoring God, God's the provider. And so the math, if we want to talk about the math, like the math works out, as some have said, 90% with God is better than 100% without Him.
Yeah.
So I think there's a, you know, just that in my own life, that simple picture of like, no, it's so good for Tina and my relationship that I've kind of come on board with this. Mm-hmm. And I think the same is true with our finances and the Lord.
Yeah. I think putting it, it's that, kind of keep going to that intentionality. If that's, if you do, you know, at the beginning of the month or whenever, you know, the first fruits, like you said, if you, you're intentionally, and then we'll kind of think roll into it, to that as well in our conversation. If I'm, you know, contacting my bank, right, and saying, okay, every time I get paid, I need this much to go here, and I need this much to go here.
Yeah.
And that starts, most, a lot of people just don't think about these things. And so when, and Christians and non-Christians, just they're, I think we live very busy lives, and if you don't pause for a minute and think about, okay, where's my money going?
Yeah,
That's that little flip book like I talked about. People have to pause for a minute and write down where their money's going, and then you can come back and say, okay, wow, I usually it's a wow, I'm out of alignment in some area of my finances, and if you take that intentionality and say, okay, I'm going to start tithing, start giving, and make it intentional, now you start thinking about the rest of it.
Yeah.
Right. You get rid of that 10%, so to speak.
That's so good.
And then now you've got the 90. Now it's, I'm intentional. I've only got, you know, maybe it's bad to say it that way, but I've only got this much now. I'm starting with a smaller pot, and now I'm going to be intentional about, okay, you know, rent or mortgage, car insurance. It changes how you think about it, and you're managing the money rather than it managing you, and planning better. Another Dave Ramsey thing is, you know, people spend more time planning vacation than they do planning their finances, which is absolutely true. And so
I wonder, as you're talking, Hank, I wonder if, because I think what you're describing is how we would describe any other part of our life following Jesus. It's, this is an act of worship. Being intentional with our finances and being good managers of what God's given us is just as much a way to glorify God as worshiping Him, as sharing our faith. And I am curious, because this is something all of us have been in ministry for a while. This topic, for whatever reason, when it's brought up, sometimes causes people to feel uncomfortable. And even in our seat as somebody in ministry, sometimes those conversations can feel a little awkward, which I think is unfortunate, because it's something that God talks about a lot, and it shouldn't be taboo. It should be talked about openly. And I think in conversations I've had with some of my friends over the years who have followed Jesus, I'm surprised by how many of them don't understand what a tithe is, don't understand that giving regularly to the local church and what God is doing isn't a suggestion or a good idea. It's, we're, the the idea of generosity is something that God modeled for us that we're meant to carry on. And I believe through the finished work of the cross and us as followers of Jesus, like the standard of the tithe was a religious institution in the Old Testament. Our call is to be even more generous than to do the bare minimum. It's to
correct
to give generously with all that we have in a way that honors God. And maybe could you speak to that? Like, why do you think this sometimes is a barrier for us? Why does this become so taboo for some people?
I think it the church hasn't historically done a great job at teaching about stewardship. And so the first thing that when I say stewardship, the first thing people think of is money.
Yeah.
And most of the time, churches only approach that topic when they need it.
And the roof's leaking. We need people to give.
Yep. You know, that kind of thing. And historically, there's the once a year. It's the message on the tithing is coming, you know. and so everybody, you know, pastor wants to look in my wallet. And so I think that we as a church can do a better job of what I kind of call whole life stewardship, right? We steward our time, our talents, and our treasure.
Yeah.
And what was the other temple? And I think
testimony
and the testimony. And I love that. Pastor Steve mentioned that at a previous sermon. And the five T's, right? But if we don't talk about it, there's a lot of people that are sitting out in the auditoriums all over the country, living their lives, not thinking about these things. And it's up to us in ministry to remind them that this is about 2/3 of Scripture talks about money and possessions.
Yeah, by some accounts, Jesus taught more about how we handle our stuff than anything else. Money and possessions, right? You know, I agree with you, Hank. I think historically, in general, the church hasn't done a great job teaching. Like, it's a regular part of the conversation. It becomes this specialized thing, which people get a little nervous about. And let's be honest, over the last maybe 30, 40 years, there's been examples of people under the banner of ministry really leveraging and taking advantage of folks from a financial standpoint. And that, you know, that reflects on all of us to some extent, especially depending on who's looking through what lens. And so I think that adds to it as well. Oh, pastor's talking about money, he's trying to get in my pockets. I wish he'd keep his hand out of my pocket. And so that's, I think, part of the equation as well, why it becomes a
and culturally, touchy subject. And culturally, I think everybody realizes, right, there becomes a point when and maybe it's when people are about to graduate college, right? I had three roommates when I was at JMU. One of them was an accountant. He is an accountant now, but he was going for a degree in accounting. Another roommate was going for a degree in teaching. And so mine was in the world of finance, right? So we're living with a guy who's probably never going to make as much. You know, my friend Greg, who was an accountant before he graduated, was getting offers. At that time, there was the big five accounting firms, right? He was being courted and flown to New York, flown to San Francisco to look at these offices. And both of them were offering him, this is a guy that has literally right out of college, he was about to get $100,000 a year plus housing for San Francisco. And then you have my friend, roommate, the teacher, who is getting offers of $35,000 a year. And that was the going rate. Renee, my wife, finished her degree in education, and her parents were like, "Oh, great! Now you can come back to California and get a job here." And the first year teacher salary in Southern California was going to be $36,000, and we chose to stay in Alabama, where her first year salary was $35,000.
Yeah,
it's the same thing, except housing is tremendously different.
Cost of living is not in the same stratosphere.
So I guess what I'm saying is, at that point, we're not in when you're in grade school and high school, even we're not making much money. There's not a big disparity, but then it becomes uncomfortable if you and I are going to go out to dinner, and I make $100,000 a year, and you make $30,000 a year. who's paying,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's restaurants that I might go to that you would never go to because it's just not in your capability. So I think there's an element of almost shame, and it's the comparison trap, right?
Yeah.
Where I'm comparing what you have to what I have.
Yeah.
As adults, we start going those separate ways, I think, a little bit.
Yeah. And I think the image that I was getting as you're sharing that, Hank, is the most beautiful picture of generosity that I can think of is the widow's mite. Jesus uses that parable of the religious leaders who they tithed everything. They were, by the letter of the law, they were more generous than every single person by what they gave. But then there was this widow who gave literally pennies, but it was all that she had. Yeah. And he looks at his disciples and says, she gave more than those guys who tied the spices in their cupboards. Like, and it is, I think it's all about our hearts, and that's where God is at. That's what God is after, is our hearts and how we view our finances, how we budget, how we align our lives, no matter whether we're the executive or we're working in a part-time job at Mickey D's. Like, it doesn't matter. We can still live lives of generosity and alignment with God's heart for us as well.
One of the things that example points out, it wasn't a parable, it was an actual thing that happened, is that God measures on a different scale than most of us do, right? Because if you were there and you saw her toss a couple of pennies in and Jesus said, oh, she gave more than everyone else, you'd be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
They gave like big checks. She threw in some pennies.
Yeah.
So there's a different scale by which God measures, and it's not even about percentages, I don't believe. It really comes back to our heart relationship with the resources that we have. And I think the opportunity for us to be very mindful of how does the way I handle my resources, how does that reflect on who or what my priorities are? And you know, I think time is another currency that we have. You know, how we spend, we use that language, how we spend our time, right? Reflects what's important to us, and how we spend our financial resources. Because we expend them somehow. We expend them into a savings account. We expend them on bills. We expend them on frivolous stuff sometimes. We expend them on providing for ourselves and our family. That reflects our priorities. And so, you know, that relationship is so important. You know, I heard you say earlier, like, it's not a heart issue or an amount issue, whatever. But I think some people go, oh, I don't have a heart issue, I just don't have enough money. Like, so where does contentment fit into that, right? Yeah. Where are we content with the things that we have or the things that we desire? What is our contentment rooted in?
Yeah.
If it's rooted in, well, I got 1 million, I just need one more. I think you might get to two and feel like you need two more.
Contentment is the biggest struggle, I think, for a lot of people. It's reflected in our society too. You'll think of the first house I had was built in 1942. It was a 2-bedroom, 1-bath house, and it was right at 1,000 square feet because that's all people needed at that time. And the funny thing is so you think, okay, 2-bedroom, 1-bath, 1,000 square feet. So a 2,000 square foot house, is that going to be 4-bedroom, 2-bath? Not usually. Usually it's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath.
Right.
And you know, then you go to a 3,500 square foot house. It's going to be, that's got to be 6 or 7 bedrooms, right? No, it's usually a 3-bedroom, 1-bath, 3-bedroom, 2 or 3-bath. And so it's like more, bigger.
Yeah.
And it's a tough thing. But that's what's available, thinking on the housing side.
Yeah. Well, and I think sometimes people look at their resources and if someone were to say, well, why are you doing that? Because I can.
Sure.
And, you know, Paul talked about the freedom that he found in Christ. And he said, all things are possible for me, but they're not necessarily
beneficial
or recommended. And I think sometimes need to keep that principle in mind with our finances. Like, just because I can do something doesn't mean I should do something. And
yeah,
if you choose to not do that, what does that free you to be able to do in a different direction?
I think of the emperor has no clothes, right? And so there's a stat that's kind of been the same for decades now, and that's that about 75, the last, in 2023, the study was about 78% of people, not, it wasn't Christians alone, but live paycheck to paycheck. And so if when you, it's hard to reconcile, like, I have enough for all these things, and then those stats come out, and 10% of those surveyed make $100,000 or more.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think that's when people have crossed over to, I'm not telling my money what to do, my money's telling me what to do. Yeah. So my money, meaning my bills, my debt, is telling me I've got to work two jobs. It's telling me I have to do this or do that.
To keep up with my lifestyle that I've chosen.
Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, do you really want to give up control of your life to something that's just going to keep driving you and driving you, meaning money? It's, do you want money to control you, or will you control it? Yeah.
And nobody wants to say this, but there's got to be, there's some radical changes that have to happen. And I experienced that firsthand with the story I told about my dad, right? He didn't have a choice. Like, we moved out of that huge house, the ridiculous house, because he, there was nothing left. He had nothing else to do but to move into that partially fin-, it was a half finished house, you know, very, very far fall from what he had. And radical changes kind of have to happen sometimes. And it may hurt at first. You hear of people losing jobs, having to downsize homes, those kind of things. It stings the pride, and I know that was my father's case. It was it was a pride issue that he struggled with, to get that things could have been different. But
You know, so, I think about driving a car, and I think going down the road, and your hands are on the steering wheel, and you're making these small adjustments all the time as you go, right? If you didn't make those small adjustments, you'd find yourself like off the road, and then you'd yank the wheel and try and make this huge correction. And probably going to crash, because that's not good. And I, do you guys think that from a financial standpoint, like, that's a picture of maybe how we, like, there's so many little decisions along the way financially that if we don't, if we aren't course correcting, so to speak, then we're going to find ourselves way over, and then disaster hits because we think, oh no, I got to course correct. And the radical changes that you're talking about, right? That's the yanking of the wheel.
I think having, you know, starting from the starting point, right? When if somebody called you up out of the blue and said, "Hey, how do I get to how do I get to Buffalo?" Well, you got to know where you're starting from, right? I don't, I can't help you, and you've got a map of some sort to guide you there, and that those small course corrections. Well, maybe you end up, and I this is telling on my geography of New York, but you know, maybe you make, you're going towards Syracuse all of a sudden. I know that's the opposite direction.
It's opposite.
And so
from where we are.
Anyway. Yep. You find yourself, you know, going the complete wrong way. You're not going to do a U-turn on the interstate. That obviously could be pretty detrimental.
Actually, I was at a car accident yesterday. Someone tried to do a U-turn.
And so the reason you were there is because you're in the
fire
roll.
There was an accident.
And so, but getting back on track is those small course corrections. And so, I don't, anybody listening, I'm not advocating immediate radical changes, but coming up with a better plan that may guide you back to the direction that you need to go.
Is it fair to say, for if people are listening and they're like, I think things are a little upside down in my financial world right now, that maybe a good place to start is what you kind of mentioned earlier is, okay, what are you spending money on? Just understand what my expenses are, and then understand what our income is. And let's at least for a month not spend more than we're bringing in.
I think those practical application steps, I think you steal my idea. Go get you a little, you know, 50-cent Mead notebook and start tracking it. I know there's apps out there, and I know those things, but something about writing it down physical act of intentional writing it down, and tracking those dollars to see where you're at. You can look back at past bank statements if you've got a bank account and kind of get an idea of where the money's going. But yes, showing your income, which for most people is fairly consistent, and then looking at those expenses and writing down the big boulders, right? The rent, utilities, and car insurance, car payments, all those things, and then kind of go from there. That's to me a good first step. Is step one, stop the bleeding, right?
Right.
And so,
and I think too, if you're a single person, then you have. You're making those decisions, but if you're a couple or a family, it's probably a collective discussion then, because you got to be working together on that.
Absolutely.
And I think I've had the opportunity to sit with couples, unfortunately, that finances is an extreme conflict divisive thing in their relationship because they're not on the same page. Yeah. So sit down, start to set some priorities, start to get the parameters of what are we spending, what are we bringing in, and what do we want to set as priorities.
Yeah, absolutely. Holding hands together, and the third part of that conversation is God.
Yeah, there's a lot more that we could dive in with this topic. Clearly, it's something that is really important to all three of us, because it's about our heart, and God's desire for all of us is to have hearts that are following after His, and it certainly includes this aspect of our lives. So, again, Hank, is there maybe a resource or two that you found to be particularly helpful as we wrap up today, just that we could point our listeners to, whether things are going really good for them and just so maybe a little tune up is helpful, sure, or they're in the thick of it right now. What are maybe two things you'd recommend?
So I'm glad you mentioned that, if things are going really well. I think we start from a place sometimes if things aren't going well,
sure,
an emergency. But if somebody finds themselves in a position where things are going great, but they just want to be better.
Yeah.
One resource that I really, really admire is Crown Financial. You can crown.org. I don't get paid by them.
We can tag it in the episode
and so
notes.
We can look at that. But there's a ton of free resources there. Dave Ramsey has a lot of free resources. Crown, in my opinion, puts a lot more biblical emphasis than maybe Dave does. And I think that's really a good start for people.
That's great. That's a super helpful resource. Thank you guys so much. And you listening, I hope you found this conversation today encouraging. Again, don't hesitate to reach out. We've got lots of people here who would love to continue the conversation with you. Simple way to do that, just hit our inbox up at podcast@victorchurch.org. You can submit questions, reach out to us that way as well. But have a blessed day. We'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for joining us, Hank.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bro.